Hello, I'm Elizabeth Silva, author of my memoir, Another Cheesy Family Newsletter. For 20 years, I, like many of you, have written a cheerful annual holiday newsletter to family and friends, leaving out the fact that my family was struggling with serious addiction and mental illness issues. So, in the book, following each letter is a narrative of the Silva family's year, uncensored. The following excerpts are samples of each. Introduction. I always wonder when I get my friends and family's annual holiday newsletters what really happened in the writers' families. What titillating tidbits are they leaving out? Each letter brims with holiday cheer, naturally. But when I read them, I ponder, did that breathtaking view of the canyon sunset come out at the expense of a bitter family argument about whether to relax on a cruise or backpack in the Grand Canyon? Did that warm and memorable family reunion result in siblings refusing to speak to each other ever again? Did that precious little schnauzer puppy chew up somebody's $300 pair of Jimmy Choos? Come on, are your kids really rocket scientists, future presidents, or entertainers of the year? And you didn't mention Junior this year. What the hell happened to him? Of course, I am myself a purveyor of euphemisms. My letters have always painted a much brighter picture of our previous year than my family actually experienced. A lot of stuff is always left out intentionally because A, it's boring, even to me. B, nobody wants to hear you whine. C, some of that stuff is just embarrassing. And D, the fact that my family has struggled with mental illness and addiction for as long as I can remember is not something other people want to hear. They want to hear good news. It's the holidays, for God's sake. We all hear enough bad news the rest of the year. Page 96. I curse Zeke Campbell to this day for destroying our stunningly beautiful, talented young daughter at just the point she should have been going out into the world and making a happy life for herself. Thanks to Zeke, that rite of passage never happened. If Zeke Campbell had not died, I'd be in prison right now for killing him myself. Zeke was the personification of worthlessness, but for some reason, 20-year-old Christine, at that time mother of 2-year-old Nikki, was mesmerized by him, as also were apparently his disciples, a group of losers, some of whom played in his blatantly untalented punk rock band, the Fuck Daddies. Which begs the question, does any punk rock band have talent? Anyway, Zeke was a high school dropout, an army reject, and an unemployed drug addict living with his poverty-stricken parents in a tiny little house in Elm Creek, a relic of a World War II Navy base and local aviation manufacturing plant housing. Zeke was a complete waste of oxygen. He was also the only guy my daughter says even today that she ever really loved, or thought she loved at the time. I knew all there was to know about Zeke because he had dropped out of high school where I worked. So when Christine took up with Zeke, we blew our tops, not only expressing our profound disapproval of him, but also forbidding her from seeing him ever again if she wanted to stay in our home with her child. Ha ha! Every parent knows how well that worked. She continued to see him on the sly, and, I learned years later, she often took Nikki with her to his parents' house. While there, she would leave Nikki in the living room with Zeke's poor, downtrodden mother, while she and Zeke did drugs and had sex in the bedroom. Then the worst happened. It was late. We were asleep when we were awakened by the doorbell ringing incessantly. When I groggily peered through the glass and saw a police car, my stomach dropped to my feet and my heart beat so hard I could hear it. I saw Christine's silhouette through the glass in the door against the flashing police car lights, and I could hear her sobbing, holding a screaming, inconsolable Nikki. They were alive. I rushed to the door, opened it, and frantically asked Christine over and over what had happened as I took Nikki from her arms. In what seemed like forever, she finally gathered up enough composure to wail, "Zeke is dead!" My immediate supposition was a drug overdose, maybe suicide, but when she'd calmed down enough to make sense, I learned he was still alive and had been taken to the local hospital by ambulance after unsuccessful efforts to revive him at home. Earlier in the evening, he had apparently presented Christine with a handful of Valium after he had already shot up with heroin and asked her if she wanted any. When she shook her head no, he had disappeared in the bathroom. She had joined his mother in the living room with Nikki to watch TV, waiting for him to come out. She got worried, though, when he didn't come out of the bathroom right away. So she knocked on the door to see if he was okay, and when he didn't answer, she panicked and grabbed the door handle, but he had locked the door. When the police arrived and forced the door, Zeke was lying completely unresponsive in the bathroom floor, with his pants and his underwear around his ankles. Nikki, though only two at the time, still remembers this scene vividly, the paramedics giving him CPR while he lay nude on the floor near death. So even though I despised him and felt no compassion for him, I immediately took Christine to the hospital where he was already in the ICU on life support. When I saw him, naked, unresponsive, and intubated, I knew by looking at his rollback eyes, the whites no longer white but blood red, his brain was dead. The damage had been done. And I said to myself, with both crushing guilt and soaring relief, thank God he's out of our lives for good. Zeke lived a couple more days and died when his mother decided to remove life support on Christine's 21st birthday. We celebrated her birthday at my mom's house, but the occasion was a solemn one. She tried her best not to cry, but after opening her gifts, she dissolved into tears and melted into my mother's comforting arms, while I silently deplored my inability to console her. Her tears were no doubt for Zeke, but also for a bitter secret none of the rest of us knew. Though we should have, she was hooked on heroin, and the whole family was facing years of pain. We just didn't know how much. The years to follow were the most agonizing my husband and I have ever experienced as we watched our oldest child, so beautiful, so bright, so gifted, disintegrate into someone we no longer recognized. Every drug addict or alcoholic lives life on the edge, and we, their parents, spouses, children, siblings, have no choice but to wait helplessly in despair for the doorbell or the phone to ring with the worst message a parent could possibly hear. So we fear the messenger. The chance of death by accident, an overdose, even murder, is multiplied exponentially the longer people abuse their substance of choice. How Christine escaped those heroin years with her life, I will never know. I don't know if she has thought about how lucky she is, but I do know she remembers that death has knocked on her door more than once, beginning with the night she chose not to accept those pills Zeke offered her. His choice killed him. Her choice kept her alive.